Thank you, Your Honors, and good afternoon. My name is Scott Johnson, co-counsel for the appellant. My colleague Paul Hogan is here at the table. I will attempt to reserve 5 minutes if for some reason I can't read the clock.
I'll wave at you.
Great.
Throw something at you or something.
Either way, whatever works. So may it please the court, I appreciate your admonitions with regard to dwelling on the facts and reading from the briefs. I won't do that. I want to discuss four areas or items that I think merit attention in this appeal. And they're big picture items. The first is the simple and long-standing law of Colorado that our courts recognize the sanctity of contracts. It is the duty of our courts to enforce contracts as they are written. It is not the function of the courts to rewrite them when they have been clearly expressed between the parties. Courts don't interfere with the situation when a party has made a bargain it's dissatisfied with, a bargain that may appear unfair or improvident. And I'm speaking primarily in the context in this case and emphasizing that this is a commercial case. This is a case between two parties with at least equal bargaining power, if not heavier bargaining power on the part of the Centura Hospital Group than the small storage facility in Colorado Springs. The courts then give effect and implement the plain and ordinary meaning of the contract terms. There are a ton of cases that say that. We've cited the Fox versus I-10 Limited case, but that doctrine stands to this day. Secondly, in this context, the determination made by the trial court, the threshold determination of ambiguity, is a question of law. That means, of course, the review is de novo. It means that this court may substitute its judgment if it disagrees with the trial court's conclusions. And that's important because the trial court erred in that determination at the very beginning of the case. The third area I want to discuss is where and how this error occurred. It occurred on motions for summary judgment. It is found in the order on summary judgment, and it's found essentially in the second paragraph and beyond. What the court did is depart from the plain wording of the contract. And the statement at the end of the second paragraph of the summary judgment order indicating that the agreement was silent, I'll say this specifically, the agreement is silent as to whether a termination fee can be charged, is where the trial court went afield. There is no termination fee in this contract. There was never intended to be a termination fee. The relationship in file storage is one of services. There are active services. We take your files in. There are static activities. We store them. There are active services. We redeliver them to you. And there are fee schedules. There is no termination fee in this contract. There is a permanent withdrawal charge when a stored item is permanently removed.
Let me ask you about that for a second.
Yes, sir.
There's a statement on page 12 of your opening brief that says, charges for permanent removal, which I assume by that you mean this perm-out charge.
Yes.
Correct. Apply to any permanent removal of an item or all items.
Yes.
There's no record support cited for that statement in your brief. It seems to me there is a difference between saying, well, I'd like all my items that are in there now taken out, but I want to keep this contract going because I might put some more back in, and saying, contract's over with, it's terminated, give me all my items.
Those would be two different scenarios under the contract, if I can describe
please,
that.
Please.
Part of sometimes withdraw records from storage, as you say, keeping the space available so that they can bring them back.
That didn't happen here.
Well, it happened, I'm sure, on occasion over the 10 years that the parties dealt with one another.
Well, but with the request that we're talking about here, which is we're done, the contract's over with, we want all of our items back. That's the context we're talking about.
The 2007 or 2006 decision to store the files elsewhere, in fact, was going to cause a permanent removal of all the files, no doubt about it.
And the termination of the contract.
Yes. And that's dealt with specifically in the termination paragraph. Now, Judge, they could have done a termination fee. I mean, if you bear in mind that the storage facility has to build and insure and pay the mortgage on and staff this file storage facility. And you bear in mind that you've got a huge customer about to take everything out the door, and it's going to take you a while to fill that space back up. There has to be some kind of protection.
Well, counsel.
Yes, sir.
I'm going to interrupt there because what you've just done has gone outside the contract. You've just asked us to consider things outside the contract.
Well, I'm telling you why there is a permanent removal fee.
Well, that's not stated in the contract anywhere. You're trying to get us to consider what your client's financial considerations may have been, the reasons that may have entered into this contract and why it did so. That's not part of the contract. I mean, it seems like if you're saying it's unambiguous, how can we consider that?
Well, fair enough, Judge. Permanent removal means permanent removal.
Well, let's go back.
Yes, sir.
There's no definition of perm out in the contract. It just says perm out.
Well, there's the permanent removal paragraph in section 2.6.
Right.
And then the corresponding fee schedule entry is perm out.
Well, all right. You say that. I mean, but there's no, the contract doesn't say that. That's the problem.
Well, the contract,
doesn't define those terms that you're trying to link together.
Judge, that's how the contract worked from day one.
Well, that's how you understand. Again, I'm getting back to what the contract says. You may have an understanding of how it ought to work, okay? But you want us to say this contract is unambiguous. In other words, we have to look at the four corners.
Well, Your Honor, and I don't mean to be argumentative here, but what else would perm out mean, Judge?
Well, it could. The question here is under what circumstances it applies. Okay, that's the question.
Is permanently out.
Well, again, that begs the question. I mean, how do we know that? It's not defined. I mean, and since the terms are not defined and don't say that, that's not what the contract says, it's silent on that issue, we're immediately into the realm of ambiguity.
If we were dealing with complicated terms or technical terms, I might agree with you. But permanently is hardly a technical or confusing term, and out is certainly not a confusing term.
Well, actually, you argued in the trial court that was a term of art in your industry, perm out.
So a shorthand for permanent removal.
In your client's particular industry.
Right.
So it is a technical term. At least you argued in the trial court it was. And you argued in the trial court that because it was a term of art in that industry, that the client should have known what it meant.
Maybe I'm falling for the same trap, but I think this particular party said they understood that perm out applied to permanent removal, and they just quarreled about the timing of the imposition of the fee. They said we'll pay it day to day, but not at the end. There is no exemption upon termination. The permanent removal fee applies whenever permanent removal occurs.
Well, let me explore that some more, because I think we're talking about the same issue here. It seems to me there is another subsection of the agreement which has some relevance here. There's a whole paragraph talking about what services you're going to perform.
Section 2,
and it goes through all kinds of things, and if you look at the schedule, there seem to be fees that relate to each of those services. One of the services, I think, is the one we're talking about here, and it says, we will permanently remove those stored materials that you no longer wish to be subject to this agreement. Doesn't that apply that the agreement is still in effect?
The agreement is still in effect, I'm sorry, when? Once the item has been removed?
Well, it says we will permanently remove those stored materials that you no longer wish to be subject to this agreement.
Right.
And doesn't that seem to assume that the agreement is still going to be in effect? You're just going to take out materials that you don't want to be charged for anymore. For example, daily fees or delivery fees or whatever.
By this mechanism, they could remove all of the fees or all of the stored items. Pay the permanent removal fee, monthly storage wouldn't apply anymore. In effect, it would be ended by conduct, especially if nothing was left to be stored.
Why?
I'm sorry.
Maybe they'd want to leave the contract in effect and put some more back in later on.
I'm sure they could bring things back in if they had not given notice of termination. But if nothing was stored, there literally would be no charges.
Is there any assertion by the hospital? They didn't understand what perm out meant.
I don't believe so. I think that Mr. Mervak, who is an extraordinarily sophisticated individual, said that he understood he was in this thing looking to turn the hospital around. B, he was a finance guy, so he was looking for costs. That he reviewed the contract and the fee schedule line by line, and that his questions were answered to his satisfaction. I did ask him if you understood what permanent removal means and that permit is a synonymous term, and I believe he clearly said yes. What Mr. Murbach said is, we didn't think it applied upon termination. We only thought that it applied for day-to-day activities.
During the contract that was, Judge Loeb has pointed out that he might read the contract that way. Other than the section he refers to, I believe section 6, is there any provision in the contract which would mislead Centura?
In fact, I think it takes him right there. And my contention, Your Honor, is that when the contract has a service, permanent removal, when it has a fee schedule, and I'm going to say that PERMOUT is exactly that, that is the fee, and when the contract under 6.1 says that upon notice of termination and during this 500 and some odd day withdrawal period, the contract remains in effect, that fee schedule then stays in effect. So if permanent withdrawal fees do not apply to the permanent withdrawal of those records, I don't know how you can get there under this contract. They have to apply. The only way they wouldn't apply is if this section said something else, like except for permanent removal doesn't apply, or the permanent removal charge is a percentage. I don't know, something that they didn't draft into this. Otherwise, it is out. That's, I think, the plainest reading of the black and white language.
There are about 20 of these schedules in the record that where PERMOUT is there's an NA next to it,
yes,
which I assume means not applicable.
It did.
Or there's a line through the, and there's no rate stated. So for those 20 departments or so, you would agree there can be no charge for PERMOUT fees?
Only for that period of storage. Those were, as we explained in the brief, those were at the beginning. I mean, there was multiple departments of Pembroke's bringing records in.
Right.
And that, we talked about that. So, you know, some of them, they said were stored in patient rooms. So a department head would say, hey, I've got to store stuff. What the NA was intended to do was provide a temporary grace period. And each one of those NAs, NA Schedule 1s, if I can use that term, is followed by multiple signed Schedule 1s with a fee, including signed Schedule 1s by Mr. Murbach, who signed the contract, and who testified that he noted the difference and is sure he talked about people to people in Centura about it.
So you described in your brief two kinds of storage. One, two men in a truck can come and get it and haul it away, and the other, they have to go through you. Now, when you're talking about the contract that has no fees, are you talking about the two men in the truck stuff, HIM files or whatever they were?
I hope I'm answering this with my answer. Please tell me if I'm not. The HIM contract was the Health Information Management Department who basically rented one warehouse and they put their stuff in it and then they took their stuff out of it. That was the HIM contract. The department's contract was the one under which multiple departments brought in records which were itemized, individually shelved throughout the facility and returned. Did I answer your question?
Were there any fees associated with the HIM contract?
There were fees, but it was a monthly storage fee and some fairly minor service work because the HIM department does that for a living. In fact, they would come pull records and we didn't itemize them or account for them or inventory them. And there was no agreement to empty that warehouse for them, so there was no term in the fee schedule covering permanent withdrawal. They, in fact, came and just removed them in bulk. Whereas on the department side, permanent withdrawal is a very specific process because those records go into shelves literally all over the facility based on where the computer finds space.
Let me see if I understand some of the facts here.
Yes.
Let me go back. When you sought payment from Centura when it terminated the contract, you initially sought payment for pull fees and for delivery fees.
Pull, PERMOUT, and delivery.
Okay, so there were three aspects.
Yes, sir.
I understand on appeal you're only challenging PERMOUT fees. Is that correct?
Well, I think that's the clearest one to point to, but the file has to get out of where it was. The PERMOUT is a separate process of accounting, and so I think that there is support in the fee schedule for imposing all three fees.
I read your brief as only challenging the ruling on PERMOUT fees.
I think that's the error, the most direct error the court made. Had the court said, I've read that fee schedule and I think the pull is included within the PERMOUT, I would have a hard time saying that that was plain error, but to throw the permit charge completely out the window is plain error. And I have 2 seconds.
I didn't do a very good job of helping you.
That's all in front of me, so.
Okay.
Any other questions for us? All right, thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm Tracy Van Pelt. I represent the Appalee Centura Health and Penrose St. Francis, attorney registration number 26483. The trial court's decision was after a week-long bench trial, and it should be affirmed. The trial court got it right, and I think one of the main issues that Masterfile has completely ignored in this appeal is the foundation of the trial court's ruling primarily is there was no meeting of the minds with respect to what would happen at termination. There is no contract with respect to that provision.
Well, there is a threshold issue here, and that's ambiguity, and that was determined on summary judgment. So it wasn't a finding of fact to which we might defer. That's a finding as to which we have de novo review, and that's threshold here, because if we determine it's unambiguous, we never get to any of the factual findings the court made. So why don't we talk about that issue, since it's a threshold issue.
Okay, and I'll jump to ambiguity, because that's what you want to talk about. But I do think the issue that the court resolved by the time of trial, which is about a year after the summary judgment motions, after additional discovery had happened, is did the parties even have an agreement with respect to this term at all? And that's I think that actually comes before whether the provision was ambiguous. But I'll talk about.
Well, I want to correct you on that, because this is really important. If the contract unambiguously provides that this permout fee is payable upon termination of the contract and throughout the withdrawal period, then none of the rest of the case really matters. None of the findings of fact matter as to whether the parties agreed to it, because the court never would have considered that issue. There would have been a judgment on liability in favor of the files, and that would have been that. We would have just gone to a damages trial. So let's talk about this ambiguity, and okay, specifically about paragraph 6.1 of the contracts, which has a provision that says during the withdrawal period, that 365 days following the 120 days to select a new vendor, that the agreement shall remain in force, and part of that agreement is the schedule. So even though the agreement is terminated, it appears to say that the agreement remains in force for another year. Presumably the schedule remains in force for another year. So why don't the permout fees apply during that withdrawal period?
Well, because the contract does not unambiguously say that they do apply. What it says is the terms of this agreement remain in effect. It's silent as to what fees apply at termination.
Well, it says the whole agreement. I mean, it doesn't say the agreement except provisions X, Y, and Z. It says the agreement. So we can presume it means the entire agreement. So the entire agreement remains in effect, and that includes charges for all the fees, permit fees, pull fees, whatever they are, remain in effect for a year.
But if you can, from the reading of the contract, determine that those fees apply to termination and the wholesale withdrawal of your records, I think it's the
point. Let me ask you this, counsel.
Sure.
Let's assume during the withdrawal period, after you have given them notice of termination, you need a file. And you go out and ask for the file. And they have fees for with pulling that out, logging it out, whatever they do. Those fees apply?
Yes, they do.
And why doesn't permout fee apply?
Because permout doesn't apply. Permout applies when Mrs. Smith needs her mammogram records sent to Texas because she's moved, and there's a day-to-day charge associated with that kind of activity. The Schedule 1 relates to day-to-day activities. I submit to you, why wouldn't
the labor cost? What do you find confusing about permout? Permanent out means permanent out, and it was the hospital confused about what that term meant?
The hospital testified, the representatives all testified, permout applied to day-to-day activities, and the master file representative testified when he walked everybody through these Schedule 1s at contract formation, he said these explain the mechanics of the operation. He never, ever explained these three fees, and let's not forget, below they sought a pull fee, a permout fee, and a delivery fee, even if we didn't want delivery. to bring the file to the threshold of Master File's door, they were going to charge $1.1 million for each and every single file stored.
Now, not $1 million a file.
$1.1 million total. They were adding a pull fee, a permout fee, and a delivery fee.
The only one here is a permout fee.
Well, that's not, I'm not sure that's so clear from the record. And I would submit to you that under the circumstances of this case, what they argued below and what they asked the court to find in ruling on summary judgment motion was all three of those unambiguously applied.
Okay, so if you went out and you withdrew a file during this wind down period, and you would have expected to pay all the fees appropriate to that withdrawal, would you not? Or in fact, probably did pay those fees.
So make sure I understand your question. So if Mrs. Smith needs her mammogram sent to Texas, we would have paid a pull fee, a permout fee, and delivery fee
no,
for that file?
You wanted a regular file for your regular course of business.
Okay.
The patients come back, or whatever reason you might have.
Sure.
Okay. You ask for the file, and they deliver the file to their threshold or whatever they're supposed to do, and they charge you fees for that. You expect to pay those fees.
Yes, that's the purpose of the 6.1 provision. So that once we've given you notice, you can't say we're not going to abide by this agreement anymore and not deliver your files. We're not going to pull them. Oh, and now the rate's $30 to pull a file. The purpose of the...
Well, why doesn't the permout fee apply?
Because the contract does not unambiguously state that that is a fee that happens at termination. And what we're talking about is termination. This whole dispute was triggered.
When did termination occur?
The termination occurred when we gave notice in February of 2007, I believe.
What's ambiguous about the provision of the contract that says it remains in effect for up to a year after that for the withdrawal of the file?
The terms of the contract that relate to the activity they need to perform for day-to-day operations isn't ambiguous. What fees apply when we pull all of our materials out is ambiguous. There's nothing in this contract that would alert any reasonable reader to find a pull fee, a permout fee, and a delivery fee. All three cumulatively are charged per file. There are thousands and thousands of x-rays stored. Thousands of them, 4,000 linear feet, 5 x-rays per inch. And the files claimed under this agreement, it could charge a pull fee, a permout fee, and a delivery fee for every single x-ray. And that's not unambiguously stated in this agreement.
So if it wasn't specifically stated. The question is whether the agreement is ambiguous without that being specifically stated.
I'm sorry.
The issue is whether the contract is ambiguous for failing to specifically say that.
Yes, under the ambiguity is created by a couple of things. The termination provision does not reference the rate schedule. It does not say, and the fees for individual activities apply on a per file basis when you pull everything out. It doesn't say that. What it says is this agreement's going to remain in effect. You still have to perform the services that are identified in Section 2. And I think in looking at ambiguity, the court is entitled to look at the course of performance and the circumstances surrounding the formation of this contract. And something that I think is very important is that HIM contract that was entered into months before this one has a permanent removal provision in it. So the statements in the brief that it has nothing to do with permanent removal are absolutely incorrect. Those contracts are identical with the exception of the daily rate schedule. So in the HIM contract, the termination provision says the terms of this agreement remain in effect during the withdrawal period, and it's got a permanent removal paragraph in Section 2. The only difference is the rate
schedule. And you can remove those files yourself.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But there's also an obligation on the files part to perform permanent removal services under that contract.
Let me ask you this. Let's assume that for some purpose I was a patient at Penrose Hospital and x-rays were taken and they're in this stored material. Would you go out and say, I need the box that contains files A through Z, or I need Arthur Roy's file? And they would give you Arthur Roy's file.
Are we talking about at termination?
No, I'm talking about during operations.
They would give you Arthur Roy's file.
They know every file.
They know where every file is.
And they've logged each of those in separately.
Yes, they have. And that's not atypical in this industry. And what The industry expert that we hired, Bowen Banbury, testified, even when that's the case, when records are removed, it is pulling this section of material off, putting it on a cart. The idea of every single x-ray is logged in and out when a contract is terminated is not what happens in the industry. I think another point that needs to be addressed here is...
They have to log out everything, don't they, to clear their records?
I don't think they do. If we've asked for anything,
you don't think
back,
they do.
That's correct. And that wasn't an issue that was raised in the trial court below. But I think one of the key things here is looking at the party's conduct with respect to formation of this agreement, which you can examine in assessing ambiguity. Masterfile's representative said they never ever discussed what fees would be charged when the relationship ended, ever, to anyone at any point in time. The Centura representatives testified they never understood the rate schedule applied at termination. Nobody ever told them this day-to-day that explains the mechanics applies when you pull everything out on a cumulative multiple line-by-line basis. And I go back to Judge Jones' comment about the NA not applicable on these Schedule 1s. There are multiple departments that at the time this contract was entered, prom out is NA. Now, how on earth do you get that's an unambiguous statement that later on, when a rate sheet's dropped off at a department, that there is a binding agreement unambiguously stated that fee chart is now going to be charged at termination for every single file stored? You can't. You can't get there.
But what about provision 2.6 that Judge Lobo is asking about? It says, we will permanently remove those stored materials that you no longer wish to be subject to this agreement. Now, in effect, Centura said, we no longer wish any files to be subject to this agreement. So it says, we will permanently remove. So can't you say permanently remove, perm out, same thing?
I don't think you can. One is talking about services and one is talking about a perm out charge on a per file basis. And it's that should have been connected and explained in the contract for you to find it unambiguous. And the other point is that this HIM agreement that was used as the template for this one, there's undisputed testimony about that in the record. The HIM department contract says we will permanently remove anything you don't want stored. And there is no fee, undisputed, the files cannot charge a fee for that service under that agreement. So the only way they get to their $1.1 million is if you can interpret from the four corners of this agreement unambiguously that when a client terminates the storage relationship, they can charge a full fee for every single file in there, and a perm out fee for every single file in there, and a delivery fee, even if you don't want delivery. Now, remember, we said we don't want delivery, and the files took the position, doesn't matter. If I walk the file to the threshold of my warehouse, I am delivering it to you, and I get to charge you $1.50 for every single x-ray I deliver. That's their unambiguous interpretation of this agreement. That's what was litigated below. So if they changed their theory on appeal, that's one thing. But what they litigated below is they were entitled to charge all three cumulatively on a per file basis based on their unambiguous contract. And that cannot be how this is read.
Well, I guess it can. And here's, I mean, we get the Nebraska case. And I recognize that in the Nebraska case, the only question before the court was whether this was an unenforceable penalty or not. The court held that it wasn't and basically said, if you made a bad bargain, tough. If it's a lot of money, tough. I mean, that's the bargain you made. I mean, what you seem to be saying is this would be so much money that it just couldn't possibly be what the parties intended. But we have to look at whether the contract is ambiguous. If it's not ambiguous and it requires your client to pay a whole lot of money, then your client has to pay a whole lot of money. Wouldn't you agree?
I would if it's unambiguous, but okay. The Barron's and Tate case, we have no idea what the language of that contract says because it wasn't addressed in the opinion at all. Their termination provision may expressly state, when you terminate, we will charge a perm out fee for every single thing you take out. I do not know what the contract in Barron's and Tate said. What I can tell you is this contract doesn't say that.
I guess my point is we can't really look to the financial consequences in determining whether the contract's ambiguous.
You can if the financial consequences are a factor that went into the discussions about the formation of the agreement.
I guess what I'm struggling with is how much we can go beyond the four corners of the contracts and determining whether they're ambiguous. I mean, you want to get in a lot of stuff that's outside the contract to say that it is ambiguous, and they want to get in stuff from outside the contract to say that it isn't ambiguous. And, you know, poor old me is sitting here saying, well, that's what we used to do when we determined the contract was ambiguous. Then we'd start talking about who said what when and what everybody thought, what everybody intended. But I'm just having trouble getting past this threshold issue of what we can consider here.
Well, the case law says local usage, and perm out means hostage fee in the industry. That was never explained to the client.
It also has nothing to do with whether the contract is ambiguous.
Well, local usage of the term does. It's something you can look at. You can look at performance after the contract.
That has to do with whether the fee is unreasonable. I mean, if there's in fact a penalty and not a fee.
Which we didn't argue. We didn't argue this was an unenforceable penalty provision. But what the case law says is you can look at local usage, you can look at circumstances surrounding the formation, and you can look at a performance afterwards to see if it's consistent with how they urge you to...
And that's if it's ambiguous.
That's to determine whether it's ambiguous or not, you can look at those.
Okay.
And the purge projects here where massive amounts of records were removed permanently, they charged labor during the course of this agreement. So how do you get to a perm out fee, a pull fee, and a delivery fee when the course of conduct during the agreement doesn't support their own interpretation? And that's something you can look at in determining whether there's ambiguity. And my time is up, so thank you very much.
Thank both counsel for their arguments and briefs. There really were two appeals here rather than one. We didn't get to the second part, or we're not arguing that separately, right? So, the case will be deemed submitted. A written opinion will issue in due course.